Yeah, where were you, baby? Whoa, when the Clarkstown mill burned down. Yeah, where were you, darling? Whoa, when the Clarkstown mill burned down. Yeah, I was way down in Sunflower. Oh, my face all in a frown.
Raven and the Blues, Harry Manx makes a really welcome return. And when you arrived yesterday, Harry, with your three cases, you said the banjo we probably won't use, but you changed your mind by today, which is lovely. I hadn't seen you play banjo before. It's obviously something which you don't normally travel with, or...
Yeah, that's true. And the banjo, you know, I think it plays a big part in the blues, in the early stages of the blues.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
You know, it's, some people say, you know, the banjo's just a cross between a guitar and poverty. I can't verify that.
Well, yes, I mean, basically, Otis Taylor went back and did a complete banjo album, didn't he? Rediscovering the blues in a way.
Yeah,
yes.
It's got a great sound. It somehow jumps out at you, and it has a sort of a simplicity and a kind of a rural feel to it. You know, you get visions of guys sitting on their porch in little shacks somewhere playing a banjo.
Your banjo is kind of ornate.
Yeah, I got some stickers on there that helps it go faster, and some mirrors even, so you can watch yourself watching me. Yeah, a little voodoo doesn't hurt.
So it's the go faster stripes on your banjo.
Yeah, that's right.
Coming to two-thirds of the way, roughly, through your UK tour, and then back home, and then off to Australia into the new year. And Australia obviously has a special place for you, because you've recorded your last couple of albums there, is it, or had them mixed there?
Yeah, that's right. I have a strong connection with Australia. You know, it's funny, as a musician, you don't always choose your places. In a sense, they choose you. You know, you find yourself being drawn there by offers of work and the excitement of the audience. So, yeah, I've ended up in Australia quite a bit, and it's a great place to travel, I can say that.
And working extensively over the last couple of albums anyway was Clayton Doley. Clayton doesn't seem to tour very much. I was with his brother Lackey in the summer of this year when he was crossing the UK. But Clayton, does he leave Australia?
He plays all the time in Australia. At the moment, actually, he's playing in Joe Bonamassa's band.
So oh, right.
He gets around. Yeah, he's the guy. If you would come to Australia and look for a keyboard, a B3 player specifically, mm-hmm. he would be the guy. And his brother's the guy when you're looking for a clavinet player.
Yes, with the whammy ball. Yeah.
Yeah, they both got they hark back to the 60s era with their music somewhat, and it's wonderful what they do.
Mm. But you and Clayton obviously spark together because...
Definitely. We have such an unspoken magic on the stage. People notice that right away. We've never rehearsed together. We just play, and it's his uncanny ability to get in tune with another musician that makes it all work, really. Mm. I do my thing, and there he is right there.
We'll talk about your current album in a bit more depth a little bit later on, but the idea behind it, which was putting strings onto numbers you'd already done before, mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Yeah, I started to listen to classical music on the radio as I traveled across Canada, and I got really into the sound of the strings. You know, it's so beautiful, and it's in many ways it's very un-blues-like, but it's beautiful, and I thought, well, you know, that touch of beauty with my songs would be really uplifting. I could kind of envision it. And I also remembered there was an album from Siegel Schwall.
Oh, yes.
Way back in the days where they did with the whole orchestra. And I thought, you know, it's not a bad idea. So I got Clayton to make up wonderful string charts for a quartet. And as I move around now, I use different quartets and present that live, and it seems to have been a really good idea.
That's what, two violins, cello, and viola, is it?
Exactly. Yeah, your average quartet, and they have charts. You know, they learn exactly as it should be played. In fact, they play exactly like the record.
Mm. And it also means it kind of, you can't extemporize, though, can you, at the same time?
I can't waver. I'm the only one without charts, too, so I have to have a good memory of what I'm doing. No, but that's been another learning, you know. I like to get stretched out, and that's been another learning, staying in my lane, as they say.
Mm. But in a sense, you could see why the classical kind of would work, because you very well melded the sound of India together with the blues, and that is really Indian classical music, isn't it?
It's true enough. I think the blues can only be enhanced by adding these other styles. There's nothing to detract from it. And I've always been, I guess, looking for ways to enhance my own presentation of the blues, and that has helped me, the Indian classical, and also now the strings, you know. It's wonderful.
Do you feel, when you're on stage now with a string quartet, do you feel kind of like a band leader?
Well, they actually have their own main violinist who kind of gives them little cues. But they all watch me for some things, you know, when exactly I'm going to bring the ending to a close and whatnot. But no, I'm a member of the band more than anything.
Right.
I think they look at me with big eyes, though, when they see, because I actually play the drums and the guitars and sing at the same time. So they're watching me do all this. It's very unclassical-like. And they get excited about it. They say, well, that's something we had never seen or thought of before. Mm.
But on your tour here in UK, you aren't touring with the quartet, are you?
No, I'm, because, you know, I tend to play smaller venues in the UK. And if I have the opportunity to play a larger venue with a bigger crowd, I definitely bring a string quartet, because I think it's some, especially for people who've seen me solo already, it's something really exciting.
Yes, and the album does, I mean, as you say, adds an extra dimension, extra layers to it, which I think would be wonderful to experience live.
Yeah.
Talking of live, what are you going to do for us next?
I think I'll play a little tune on the Mohan Veena, the 20 stringed Indian slide guitar. This is a lovely sound instrument. We'll play a cheerful little thing called Death Have Mercy. Thank you.
what is this that I can't see? And a cold mist is running over me. Well, stretch my eyes, wanna stretch my limbs. Ain't it the way that death begins? Now, now, well, oh, oh, death. Death be easy, no. Death be easy, child. Oh, death. Pass me over, yeah, now. Another year, I swear. Another year, no. Another year. You down will hold so soon, child. You're a flower, make death come on out. Oh, cut you down will hold so soon. You know that, oh, oh, death. Death be easy, no. Death be easy, child. Oh, death.
Manx live on Houseboat on the Thames with the Mohan Bina and No Death. That's been part of your set list for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think I learned that tune when I was a teenager. Well, I'd heard it the first time. It's actually an a cappella tune that I just put some chords to.
The Mohan Bina, at one stage, was it last year or the year before, which was it was became more famous than you did?
Yes, it's true. It got stolen in Chicago, and you know, after I found it had been stolen, it tore me up. I went to that show and I felt like my world had fallen apart. It was the worst day of my life. But you know, as events moved forward, I came to see that it was, in a way, a kind of a blessing, because I received such a great outpouring of support and people helping me try to find it. 5.5 million people on Facebook. Oh my God, I got offers of work. I sold downloads left, right, and center. And yes. So many good things came out of it.
Didn't somebody offer you theirs, as I remember?
Oh yeah, yes. I had three people offer me Venus, you know, from different places. I had guitar builders offer to make me. You know, it was really an amazing outpouring. I think the story grew bigger than me. It was about somebody getting ripped off that shouldn't have got ripped off, you know, and that resonated with so many people.
And then a couple of days later, they got him, and your guitar came back.
Yeah, yes. 2 weeks later.
Oh, was it 2 weeks later?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, it came. They had a sting operation at the airport, and they found the same thief, and he gave the guitar up, and there I was with it again. Once again, I had a huge following on Facebook about that. That was wonderful.
For those who haven't seen it and are wondering how the sound is made, it's 20 strings, standard 6 top, and then 14 down below, is that?
Yeah. 8 on the top.
Oh, 8 on the top.
Yeah. The string arrangement is exactly like a sitar, which is essentially you play on 3 strings on the top, and the other 5 are just a context to play within. And but yeah, it's exactly similar to the sitar. It is a sitar in a slide guitar version. It's really what it is.
When we first met, you explained how the designer or the creator of it wanted to have a sitar which he could travel with.
Yes, like that. And he'd been a sitar player initially, but he kept fooling around on this slide guitar that his father, well, his guitar with the axle from a Honda motor scooter. He kept sliding around on it. And his parents were, because they were all, the whole family was musicians in Rajasthan. The father was kind of horrified. He's like, don't waste your time with that, you know, get a real instrument, a sitar or something. But eventually he got so proficient at it that everyone started to realize, no, this is really something. And then he added all the other strings to it, and it became the Mohan Veena, named after Vishwa Mohan Bhatt.
And it's still kind of a rare instrument. Like, how many? I mean, there aren't many players of it, are there?
No, there's not many Westerners. There's not any really that I know of that have managed to play it, because it's not so much the strings and, you know, the holding the bar and everything as much as knowing Indian music. Otherwise, in the hands of a Westerner, it's going to sound like a dobro guitar, for instance.
Yeah.
So one has to study Indian music to bring out the tones and to know where you want to go with it. I've studied Indian music quite a long time. What I do now, you won't really call it Indian music as much as I've captured the flavor of India in my music.
Yes. You had about 10 years there, was it?
Yeah, I was 12 years there, and I studied with Vishwa for 5 years. So I had enough time to really absorb the culture and the music. I have the music in my head. I can hear it, you know, and that's a good place to start with. When you can feel it and hear the music, then it's going to come out your fingers.
Do you have to go back at all to kind of top up the...
I was there this year for a month.
Okay.
I like to tell people I spent a year there this month.
Right.
It's an intense place.
Yes.
But I will never lose what I gained in those 12 years, no matter how hard I try. My blues is always going to be a little east.
Yes.
And, I could go on studying the Indian music, but, you know, I came to a point where I realized that I'll never be really masterful with this music, because it's not really in my blood, whereas the blues, I can feel it.
Right.
You know, down to my bones, I can feel it. So I can always play the blues with that sincerity and authenticity that I want.
Mm-hmm. We'll go back to the album, where you went back and chose numbers you'd done before, some covers, some of your own. And was it easy to choose?
Well, to some degree it was, because I thought about songs that would be uplifted by the strings, you know. It's not every song that would need it or would really respond well, but the ones, especially some very beautiful songs where, you know, that's where the strings really come in, and they can break your heart with the swells, you know, and the chords that they play. So I started with that. But then just to tease it all, I had them playing on, you know, Baby Please Don't Go and Help Me.
Yes.
And for the what they played on Help Me was actually the Booker T's lines from Green Onions.
Right.
Yeah, we took those lines and put them on Sonny Boy Williamson's Help Me, and away they went. They look surprised at themselves when the string players play it. They're not sure where it's all coming from, but they enjoy it. They feel like they're cutting it.
I haven't seen the stage plot. How is it laid out? Are you to one side and the quartet to the other?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're over there and I'm over here.
I guess there must be times when you're doing it live, especially when you get the hairs on the back of your neck go up.
Oh, yeah. Rehearsing with them, it's hard for me to stay focused because I'm quite often listening to them and getting inspired. I'm going, wow, especially the first rehearsal, I was messing up all the time because I was listening to them. But now I actually try not to listen to them because it's a distraction. I stay in my lane, as
yes,
I said.
Yeah. Okay. We've moved on to the current album. Now, what's about 14 albums in, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really? Yes. Many of them with kind of punning titles, which was deliberate, I know. But you had a couple which didn't. Is that an aberration, or was the muse not with you?
Well, I always tried to get a title that will jump out at people, you know, and because you want them to at least remember the title, if not the music. And that's been working pretty well. Mm. And I have a wonderful artist that does has done all my CDs, and he always tries to make a visual impression of the words of the title, you
yes.
know. So if it's Dog My Cat, he's got a cat on the front and a dog on the back, sort of like this. So we have fun together. I get the words and he gets the visuals and away we go. But yeah, it's fun for me. I play with the words a bit as I do in the songs too.
Mm. I'm trying to think. Your last live album was a while ago, Glenn Gould, wasn't it?
Live at the Glenn Gould, yes, I think so, yes, with some wonderful players. Steve Mariner, a great blues player from Canada. Kevin Bright, a wonderful guitarist. And I had some Indian musicians there too,
yeah,
a vocalist
right.
and a
tenor. I'm just thinking that you're due a live album, aren't you, in a way, at some stage?
I suppose so, yes. You know, the Faith Lift is by and large, you know, I played the guitar and sang at the same time in the studio for all those tracks.
Right.
Studio, I say, but really we were doing it in hotel rooms and backstage with a computer. That's the state of the technology.
I know, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, we're just sitting talking now and recording onto multi-track, just literally using, you know, a laptop and
that's
some microphones.
Right. Yeah. I think it's wonderful for everyone to have that accessibility to recording now. I mean, it's probably not wonderful for these big studios, but for the rest of us, you know, everyone has the ability to record now. Mm. It doesn't help you play any better, but it gives you the chance to try.
Yes. You do a lot of road miles a year, don't you? You're traveling across
yes.
Canada and into America, and of course then your travels into Europe and things.
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever wake up and think, oh no, not again?
Well, not really. No, I enjoy the journey, you know. Something always remains the same for me. I'm the same guy when I wake up wherever the environment is. So there's that, you know. I'm
yeah.
not lost in it. And I'm not longing to be any particular place. My home is sort of with the music, and you know, don't tell my wife I said that, but that's the short and long of it.
Yeah, but you live off the beaten track in a sense, don't you?
Yes.
And just off Vancouver on an island. So
yeah, yeah. We have a house on an island, but when I'm on the road, I have a house truck which I sort of can sleep and eat in, and it is sort of like being at home in many ways.
Yes.
But you know, this kind of lifestyle, it's I wouldn't recommend it for everybody because it's hard on relationships. It's hard maybe on your kids or whatever. You know, you have to have the right situation, the right partners, and then you can do it. And you know, one guy told me once, the hardest thing about going on the road is keeping the smile off your face when you're going out the door. That's a bit hard, but there's some element of truth. All musicians know what I'm talking about there, because it's not work. It's kind of you feel more like it's work when you're home and you got the bills and you got the things
yes.
you need to do, the honey-do list from your wife, honey-do this, honey-do that. So when you're going out the road, just make sure you don't smile.
Yes.
You'll be right.
You've put the Mohan Veena down and picked up standard guitar now, so what are you going to do for us next?
I think I'm going to play, let's see. Let's do Only Then Will Your House Be Blessed.
Let it go now, now let it go, go, go. Let your sword of vengeance rest. Whoa, do the blind lead the blind. Oh, don't be cruel to be kind. Only then will your house be blessed. Yeah, and offer prayer, oh, offer a sweet prayer to your uninvited guest. Oh, won't you give him the right? Would I be welcome through the night? Only then will your house be blessed. Turn your cheek, turn your cheek, child, turn your other cheek. May your mercy manifest. Oh, when the hawk and the dove, oh, fly in circles round your love. Only then will your house be blessed. Sword of vengeance rest. Whoa, do the blind lead the blind. Oh, don't be cruel to be kind. Only then will your house will be blessed. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I think one of the most played tracks by me on the radio show over the years from you, along with actually an awful lot off Wise and Otherwise, I guess, you know, which was I think where I first kind of discovered you in a way.
Yes, right.
So you mentioned, I mean, in terms of writing, are you writing very much, or is it?
I have been, you know, for. I've really only been writing 20 years. I started in my 40s to start writing songs. And after I got past the initial first one or two songs, they started to really flow very easily. In fact, you know, I couldn't understand when people would talk about writer's block or something like that. It just poured out of me like a whole lifetime of things to say and express. But that sort of ran its course a few years back, and I it wasn't that I struggled. I just didn't feel like trying even to write anymore. I feel like I'd said everything I needed to say, and I didn't want to, you know, belabor the point and write things that didn't have my heart in it. So I let it go, and you know, that's when I did the string album and some other things. But lately, it come back by itself. I just feel inspired, and I wake up in the morning. I say, I got to get my guitar. I think I've got something going on here.
Right.
Or I get an idea while I'm driving, and so this thing has its own, you know, season. It comes and it goes.
It's got a cycle which is coming back. That's
you
right.
You got to let it go when it goes, and welcome it when it comes.
Mm. Are you inspired by much other music that you hear and watch and things?
You know, honestly, not particularly. I don't engage with other music much. For instance, when I drive, I never listen to music. And I drive across the country. I'm inspired by some, my silence. Yes. It's funny, you know.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, we've met each other on a couple of occasions and had quite some quite long chats. And yes, you are a private, silent person, aren't you, really? Yes.
Yeah, I love, you know, I'm a meditator, and silence is, you know, is the ultimate music in a way. In India, there's this kind of a hierarchy of sound that they talk about. And at the top is silence, and then comes music, and then comes language, which I find that very interesting, because music is next to silence. It's you. For instance, you can say some things with words, and what you can't say with words, you could say with music. You could indicate, and what you can indicate with music, there's silence. So,
it's like the hierarchical pyramid, then, but in a sense, with silence at the top and music.
Yes. But you won't make any money selling silence.
Well, John Cage did for 3 minutes or so. Yes, but you're right. Yeah. So it's something therefore which you're not forcing or belaboring, but it's coming back naturally in a sense.
Yeah, that's right. I just let it come, and it came around again, you know, songwriting. I have things now which I'm starting to put together for a new project. And yeah, things change, things grow. And that's important as an artist. You know, you can't get off the wheel somehow. You can't stop and say, okay, that's enough. I've done enough, or I'll ride on this, what I've done. No, you have to be constantly evolving in order to engage your crowd. You know, otherwise, when you present what you're doing, if you're not really with it, if you're not present with it, they can feel it somehow, and they say, "Oh yeah, I've seen that act, and let's go see somebody else now." So that's important. If you want to sustain a career, you have to keep developing yourself and your music. Both, I think, contribute to a good career.
When you're traveling, are you carrying your full back catalog on your merch stand, or just a handful of CDs?
This time I'm just carrying one disc. You know, when I'm in Canada, I'll carry quite a few, but I don't think I've ever, except maybe when I play on my own island, will I bring all the CDs out. I just bring a few, you know. I don't know. I've never been developing the merch side of life as much as I probably could, you know.
The Harry Manx beanie hat, you mean?
Yeah,
like that.
Anything. I've let that go. I focus on the music. And I have a woman who sells my merch in Canada, and she's always very encouraging. She does a good job.
And it's all available on your website and stuff as well,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And, you know, as we talked about the other day, we'll probably be moving to USB sticks at some point from CDs, because it's more practical, and you can, everyone can use it with their computer.
Right. You were saying last night you could literally buy the back catalog, all of it, yes.
Yeah, so that's right. You could sell the whole catalog in one go. And so I'm thinking about that.
Something to be said for that. Okay. People want to learn more about you. Where do they go? Where is the website which will tell them everything they need to know?
EricClapton.com. No, it's HarryManx.com. And I'm also on Facebook. I've got a surprisingly large number of friends on Facebook who I've never met.
Yes. Well, that's par for the course, I think. Yes. I think it's a large number of Facebook friends who I've never met, you know. It's embarrassing, actually, because when I go to festivals and things, they come up and go, "Hi, Dave. I'm Tim." "Tim who?" You know. "You're my friend on Facebook."
So, Tim, if you're listening, he really does. Still love you.
It's been a joy to see you again, Harry. What are you going to finish with?
Oh, I think we'll play... let's play this first song that I wrote and recorded on my very first album. It's a little thing called Bring That Thing.
Trying to save your face, well, need some loving, girl. No, I have it just to decorate your place. A dog, my cat, catch and scratch that itch. Things are so much more simple child when we didn't have a stitch. Bring that thing back home. We'll bring that thing, yeah, yeah, back home. Whoa, child. Some folks fail living without love, or somehow will that might float, but I kinda doubt it, cause sure been fun up till now. Yeah, I might be the one laying silver down in your hand. Well, whatever else I may or may not be, I swear I'll always be your man. Bring that thing back home.